that's awesome. You know, my mind is just.
This is Jim Williams.
My name is Madeline Buble. I'm at the Ralph K. residence interviewing Mr. Ralph K. The date is June 22, 1979. Mr. K., where were you born?
I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, but moved to Waukegan, Illinois when I was quite young.
What were your parents' names?
My father was Dr. M.J.K. and his wife was Annie.
Annie, and what was her maiden name?
Her maiden name was Stein.
Annie Stein.
Right.
Were they born here in the United States?
Yes. Born in Chicago.
Born in Chicago. Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I have one sister, Bernice.
And where does she live?
She is now living in Boynton Beach, Florida.
In Florida. And you say you moved to Waukegan.
Right.
What size town was Waukegan?
Well, Waukegan, at the time we moved there, when I was a peckin' child in arms, is about 16,000. It's now probably about 50,000.
And you say your father was a physician?
Yes.
And practiced, I suppose, all of his life?
Yes, he was a 50-year member of the American Medical Association. I'm quite proud of that.
Oh, I see. All right, now, your wife's name was Doris?
Doris Deutschie.
Doris Deutschie, and she was born in?
I believe Chicago.
Chicago.
But moved to Minneapolis.
Minneapolis, Minnesota. All right. And when did you come to Castroville? What year?
We came to Castroville in 1939.
Oh, I forgot to ask you what year you were born, if you don't mind telling me.
No, I was born October 10th, 1902.
1902.
That makes me 76.
You're 76, and you came here in 39.
Right.
Okay, so you were approximately 36 or 37 years old.
Right.
You had always lived in the North.
Always lived in the North, yes.
And before you came here, what was your occupation in the North? What was your job, your occupation?
I worked in department stores, merchandise manager in a large department store.
Okay, and then what was the reason for your move here? Were you transferred or just decided to leave the area?
No, I decided to leave the area. And I've since become a Texan by adoption and preference.
Good. So then when you moved here, who was your employer? Who did you go to work for?
Wolf and Marks in San Antonio, the old department store.
Is that was on the corner of
Maine
and Houston, right?
Maine and Houston. No, Soledad.
Soledad and Houston, right. I remember it was a very large department store. Okay, and then, all right, now, what was your impression of Castroville coming from the North and moving here in such a small community? Wasn't it quite a change?
It was quite a change, although we did live in San Antonio for about 6 months prior to coming here.
I see. And
we love it and have all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you always commuted to your
work.
Yes,
we both commuted until I finally left Wilford Marks to go on the road.
And then you worked for the?
Worked for several different manufacturers.
And I think when I learned to know you, you were working for the Lady Marlene.
Lady Marlene Brazier Corporation.
Brazier.
And living off the fat and the flat of the land.
Very good.
Some people call it the meat packing business.
Yes. You always told me that's what you was your job, or you were in the meat packing business.
Right.
You had quite a large territory, I think, when you as
I covered four states.
Mm-hmm. That was Texas,
Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Arkansas.
And you would be away for what length of time?
Generally got home on weekends.
You made it home on weekends?
Tried to,
okay. And Doris worked for Jossie.
For Jossie, yes.
And she,
quite some time.
All right. Okay. So you've lived in this same house all the time.
All the time.
And this is one of the old pioneer homes, and
right.
Belongs to Mr.
Arthur Coyle.
Arthur Coyle. Okay. Can you think? All right. Before we started the interview, we spoke of the old telephone company. Tell me some funny incidents that you remember about that.
Well, at that time, the late Casey Tyner was the night operator. Mm-hmm. And when I was on the road, and my wife would be expecting me at a given time, and I found I couldn't make it because of one thing or another, I would call her to tell her so. When I put the call in, our number here was 76.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Yes, I remember.
And at that time, Casey Tyner would answer, and I'd say, Mrs. K, it's 76. And Casey would recognize my voice and say, "She ain't there, Mr. K. I think she's over tomorrow. You want I should call her there?"
That's what you call getting service above and beyond.
Above and beyond the call of a telephone operator. You miss that now.
Yes, yes. In fact, when I was interviewed the other day, I told some of these incidents, you know, and we still have people that say they like the personal touch, you know, but we couldn't always give the best of service, but then.
There was nothing wrong with the service, and for a long time after Ma Bell took over, when the phone would ring, my wife would run to the old phone here and pick it up the receiver and say, "Hello, hello, hello." You couldn't understand why nobody answered.
She'd go to the wrong. You had the old phone was still in the house.
The old phone was still here. We hide the present one.
Can you think of any other funny incidents that occurred through the years that you were here? Any of the people that you knew?
Well, for a long time, and I don't know if this should be told or not, when we first moved out here, Bernice Cheerhart, later became Bernice Edinger,
yes,
worked for us.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, we were quite romantic, and Doris always used candlesticks on the table for our evening dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Bernice couldn't understand that, and went home and told her mother, "I don't understand Mr. and Mrs. K. I guess they're trying to save electricity, but they always use candles." A long time after, when Bernice gave us notice that she was going to get married, and Doris asked her what she would like for a wedding present, she sort of hemmed and hawed and said, "I'd like a pair of candlesticks like the kind you have."
How cute. No, that's perfectly all right. Okay, I know that you used to go deer hunting. Had you done any deer hunting in the north before you came here?
No. The only hunting we ever did was for birds.
Mm-hmm.
That would be town walking is on Lake Michigan, and there are a number of small lakes around. We would go for ducks, mud hens, things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only hunting we ever did, all outside of shooting rabbits.
Well, how did you get started? I remember when you used to go with a certain group of men. How did you get started doing that?
Oh, I don't know. It was like being initiated into a college fraternity.
Or an exclusive club, so to speak.
Yes, yes.
That was up at Chappie?
No,
Coley Haven.
Lake Coley Haven.
That was very exclusive.
Yes, it was. Believe me, it was. There's one very funny incident there that I think is worthwhile telling. The first day of the season, I climbed in my stand quite early in the morning, waiting for daylight and a buck. Well, come daylight, I looked out and saw 2 points of a deer profiled me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in those days we had a 3-point buck law, and of course seeing the 2 points made it legal.
Mm-hmm.
So I blasted away. The deer stayed there.
Oh?
Yes. They had killed a 4-point buck the night before for camp meat and stuck the head of it in the brush opposite my stand, which is their way of initiating it. The only case in history where a deer was shot and the head remained and the rest of it ran off.
How long did it take you to realize what they'd done to you?
Not long, not long. But I climbed down because I had a choice of two things. I could either get mad or laugh at it, and I chose to laugh, so everything was fine.
That probably was the wiser choice.
Yes, yes. I never get over it. I had.
Right. And the first day of deer season, or the evening before, was just like a holiday.
Oh, decidedly so.
You had to be sure you had all your gear, and you had enough spirits and a deck of cards.
Deck of cards is most important.
Yes, okay. I know that you've made many trips to Mexico. That was one of your...
That was one of our pleasures.
One of your favorite places to travel to. Can you tell me anything about Mexico of interest that you might recall?
Well, we generally hit the off-the-beaten-track places. Very seldom we went to Mexico City, except to pass through. Similarly with Acapulco. Our pet spot was a little town called Cihuatanejo on the west coast, about 150 miles south of Acapulco. And it was just a beautiful spot. Service to it was pretty poor. They had a DC-3 that ran three times a week, and they would have to climb the mountains and then coast down to the shore.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun, and we enjoyed it. And that was our pet spot.
Mm-hmm.
But there were several others that were off the beaten track, as well as Uruapan and the district of the tombs, the archaeological sites.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always fun.
That was at Palenque and...
We've been to Palenque, to Chichen, Tulum, you name it, and I think we've been to most of them.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone almost every way but Oxcart. We have gone by plane, train, automobile, taxi, you name it.
Is that right?
It's always fun.
I'm sure it was. That's one place I've never visited and wish I hope I get to one of these days. Do you have any children, Mr. Kay?
I have one son by a former marriage.
And his name is?
His name is Peter Kay. And he is associate editor of the San Diego Union.
Right. Is he also a correspondent?
He's a TV, he has been on TV and has won an Emmy for the during the Watergate trial.
Right, yes. All right. And does he have any children?
He has three.
And their names are?
Their names are Adam, Terry, and Lauren.
And he lives in California?
He lives in California, Del Mar.
How long have you been retired, Mr. Kay?
I've been retired since 1970.
And have you enjoyed it?
Yes, I try to keep busy.
Mm-hmm.
The only trouble with retirement, you don't have time to do anything. You're just too busy.
Too busy, you don't have time to do anything.
Right.
I understand you're very active in the, am I saying, pronouncing this correctly, Ostomy Group in San Antonio?
Group, yes. I've been one of the founders, and I write a newsletter for them. It goes out every month. We've got roughly, slightly under 200 members, all of whom have had that type of surgery.
And what you do as a volunteer service is visit these people.
Visit the new ostomates either before surgery and or after surgery to show them that life isn't over by having that type of surgery.
And to give them courage and teach them.
Yes. Teach them how to take care of themselves.
To take care of themselves and live a
live
normal life.
A normal life.
Right. Right.
In other words, our feeling is life is for the living.
Very good, very good. Mr. Kay, I understand you're an avid reader. Could you tell me what your favorite subject is?
Well, my favorite subject is archaeology, especially as relating to Mexico in the pre-Columbian era.
And how far back does that date?
Well, the pre-Columbian era can go back to quite a few hundred B.C., but it reached its height mostly around 900 A.D. And, of course, the conquest of Mexico by Cortez was in 1519.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lapse of over 600 years, but they don't know what happened.
Okay, now, in your opinion, or in the theory of archaeologists, are some of these ruins that we mentioned, are they related to this era? The ruins at Palenque and the various places you visited?
Oh, yes, yes.
That's all architecture from?
A lot of the architecture is there, but some of the customs are different, and there's been quite a controversy as to whether you recall the Kon-Tiki, the raft boat that came from Egypt, whether they came from there to Mexico, because there's a relationship between the jewelry that they found in the tomb. But most experts say no.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, They haven't brought any of the grains that they used in Egypt, nor is there any resemblance between the pyramids mm-hmm. of Egypt and the pyramids in Mexico. Mm-hmm. One comes to a pointed peak at the top, the other one is flat. Mm-hmm. So whether that's conclusive or not, and there's still many things left to be found.
Well, that I read a book recently about a scientist. He took some men in a leather boat from Ireland.
Yes, but whether they got down as far as Mexico or
no, not. Right, I don't think so, not no, according to the, but, no. But this is a similar theory,
yeah.
Right. All right, you say that most of your life, while you were employed, you were in merchandising or salesman.
Right.
Is there any other occupation that you often wish you might have done or thought that you might have liked to have done?
The only thing I could think of would be a secondhand bookshop. But then I don't know if I can sell the books or not after I've read them and enjoyed them.
Yes. Okay, let's go back to your childhood days in Waukegan. Can you tell me some of the things you remember as a child?
Yes, one of the things that used to be a great pleasure was cutter racing. Now, a cutter is a form of a sled drawn by a horse. Two passengers and a horse, and we would race. I remember once my dad was driving and I was sitting alongside him, and the cutter tipped. I went out, rolled down a good-sized bluff, but nothing ever happened. The snow was soft enough to where nothing happened.
No broken bones.
No broken bones.
That was a cold, very cold climate compared to Texas.
Yes.
For instance, what time of the year would the first snow be, and say how many months of the year was there snow?
Well, the snow would generally start early in November and last a little, possibly March or April.
So therefore, everything you did, you had to walk through snow or
yes.
Get to whatever you were going to do.
Whatever you want.
Did you live in a two-story house pot with a furnace? Is that type of a building? Or?
Yes, we had a regular house with a furnace. The fireplace was more ornamental than useful,
mm-hmm.
but we had to have heat
mm-hmm.
because the wind blowing off Lake Michigan can get awful, awful cold.
When did your father first get an automobile? If you were born in 1902, I would imagine that was in the horse and buggy.
That was horse and buggy. I think Dad got his first car, which was the two-cylinder Maxwell, in 1908.
Oh, my.
I think that's the car that the late Jack Benny talked about, the one he had.
Sounds like it, yes.
And from there on, we went through a series of Ramblers.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, they went to Jeffrey,
mm-hmm.
and then to Nash.
Mm-hmm.
Because my dad, when he was working his way through medical school, worked for the Rambler Bicycle Company.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the loyalty he had for his old employer.
All right. Was he was he already a doctor when you were born?
Oh yes.
Okay. Well, yeah. All right. He was. I would imagine he was the old-fashioned type doctor that
right.
went on house calls and.
House calls and including house calls could be going out in the country when before automobiles on a sled or cutter carrying a. Used to wear a heavy fur-lined overcoat, and sometimes to deliver a baby, he may have to wait a day or so. He simply had to be prepared to spend a day or so. And that was the way things were done in those days.
How interesting. What about, you read these things that when they paid, that he sounds sort of like a country doctor. Just
right.
Did he always get paid for his services?
No, sometimes he was paid in the dressed chicken or some corn or something of that sort.
Right.
But the doctor in those days was always the last to get paid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No sense of business.
Mm-hmm.
But they were dedicated.
Dedicated to their profession.
Right, right.
And they always managed to make it.
They managed to get along.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different story today.
Very different. You usually don't find that personal touch between or communication between the patient and the doctor. That
yes, way back when I first started in college or even before that, I would go out on some house calls with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And he always if it was, especially if it was a youngster, he'd always manage to hold their hand.
Oh.
There was always the touch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to do something.
You mentioned college. Did you graduate from college?
Yes, University of Chicago.
University of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And what was your major?
I majored finally in English and psychology.
Psychology. What are your impressions of the children now, our different generation? And you mentioned someone, one of the youngsters came over here and talked to you the other day and asked you questions.
Yes, it was quite interesting. He asked me what I did as a boy. He said, did you look at TV and listen? I said, no, we didn't have TV in those days. And he sort of snorted a little bit. He said, how about the radio? No, we didn't have a radio. So that was more than he could understand.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, he said, almost in desperation, what did you do? I said, we played games, we visited, we had companionship. Period.
Right. It's that's true. There was a lot of visiting.
Yes.
For recreation.
Right.
Mr. Kay, I understand you're in the process of moving to San Antonio. Is this correct?
That's correct, Madeline. My wife, as you know, passed away.
Yes.
About a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is just too much house
mm-hmm.
for one person to live in. I don't like my own cooking, and I need to get away.
And where will you be living?
I'll be living in San Antonio. The address is 455 East Sunshine. It's in the north part of town, convenient to the hospitals, where I do most of my volunteer work.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there anything else you'd like to add, Mr. Kay?
No, I think that pretty well covers the waterfront.
Okay, well, I thank you very much.
Well, thank
you. I really
enjoyed
it.
I hate to leave Castleville, but time marches on.
Well, we're all going to miss you, and of course, you know I'm on the in the process of retiring myself, and you just, all the years of working at the post office, you were one of my favorite people.
Well, thank
I enjoyed visiting with you. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.